Let's go, rock stars. I've opened up a small beta for the Mental Fitness Blueprint, a personalized 90-day guide for working with your mind instead of fighting against it. There's only 50 spots, so if you feel called to this work, I'd love to have you part of that first 50. Details are in the show notes or at mchampagne.com. Who are you?
It's funny. I went through a similar exercise when I was preparing for a speaking opportunity. And the person I was speaking with was indigenous to the land that they live on. And they were talking about how in introductions, it's not about what you do. It's about how you are in relation to your community.
Mm.
And so that's where I always, that's where my mind always goes. Ever since then, I've just been like, well, I'm a sister.
Yeah.
I'm a middle child. I'm an only daughter. Between two brothers. But then in terms of like how I would define myself, I would say I definitely relate to being a healer.
Okay.
But not like a healer of other people. It's sort of like my own healing work. And then if people want to join me on that journey,
they're welcome.
Yeah. Community builder.
Hmm.
Maybe.
Where did the healing first show up in your life? Were you surrounded by that growing up, or like what was your intro to that kind of work?
It's such a great question, and I think it kind of was always there. I definitely was born highly sensitive, meaning like super attuned to the world around me, and so paying close attention to everything and having a lot of feelings, big feelings about everything around me. And so then in order to participate in the world and make friends and be a good family member, learning how to articulate those feelings was a really important part of growing up. I always wanted to be understood. I think a lot of us, maybe all of us, feel that way. And I think maybe it took a little bit of extra work and energy to try to be understood because I was having maybe a slightly different experience than a lot of the at least my family of origin. I do think my mom, though, was really helpful. She is very spiritually connected. Both my parents had experienced significant loss when they were younger. And so I think even the family mythology of like loss and navigating loss made me feel like from the beginning, I was sort of straddling this world of people who are here right now and people who were here before and are now present in different ways, not physically.
Wow. Wow. And how does this all kind of interweave with what you do day in, day out? What's the official title? Is it head of HR for Ticketmaster?
I'm
head of people?
Director of Human Resources. Sorry.
Okay.
And I never write anyone off is how I would say it influences my day to day. I see the workplace. I actually joke about this all the time, but it's like not even really a joke. I'm like, my work is my spiritual experience. Like I am having a spiritual experience at work every day. And I think Ticketmaster, because I've been there for 8 years, has been one of my greatest spiritual teachers.
How so?
Because being in HR is this really interesting role where people can come to you for anything. And you know from the very beginning of working in HR that there is no true separation between work and life. And that there isn't a separation between business and personal. And
you are a gift just for saying that. That's not how it actually is spoken about. Sorry, I had to say that. Keep going.
Thanks. I wish we acknowledged it more. And so I think the reason the role feels very spiritual is because it feels like an opportunity to acknowledge that and to witness and like call forth everyone's humanity and notice our interconnectedness and, yeah, to never write anyone off. To be able to say like, if a manager comes to me and says, oh, this person is underperforming, my first question is probably going to be like, oh, have you checked in with them to see if everything's okay? Like, when did this change? Has it always been this way? And then that leads oftentimes into some very deep conversations and some very personal experiences and connections, and that feels spiritual to me.
So as I was preparing for this, I wrote this line down that, and I'm curious to see, I mean, I feel like you're kind of validating it, but I wrote almost like you were put here in some way to embed humanity into massive systems and companies.
Yes.
Without breaking the system, but it's almost like you have to be a bit of like an orchestrator and strategist to do that. Cause I couldn't agree more with you. It feels, you know, like our spiritual world and our tools and our practices and that whole piece of it, like it's all intertwined, but it still feels like that's over here and work and performance and stuff's kind of over there. And then every now and then people kind of in secret talk about how they're linked, but it's still almost very, I mean, we're part of the reason for the show, obviously, is to try to make that less secret, but it still seems to be kind of like the norm or the operating flow around like, yeah, I, you know, on the weekend I went and did this retreat or I had this experience and, but it's like this thing way over here. Like you realize like, you know, when our minds are not functioning and they're overwhelmed and, you know, our body and all that is just not in a great place. Like that affects everything, of course. Yeah. Right. Like, so they have to be there. It's all one system. Right.
And I think I so appreciate you saying that because I do feel that more and more. Like, I feel like if I have like a purpose, or I guess where I find the most meaning in my work is being that person who can help bridge. I think the worlds are the same, but like bridge.
Yeah,
the spiritual and the corporate, or the human and the corporate. One of the ways that I found it's quickest for me to do that is by sort of offering myself up in these corporate settings. And so like I'll always go first.
Yeah.
With sharing the vulnerable story. And what I've found, and I think why I feel so close to so many of my coworkers, is because the moment you create that space, like everyone will meet you there.
Yes. And it's so interesting because I see this on, you know, whether it's, you know, whether I'm at a offsite or some sort of team activation, it's funny, like depending on the person who brings me in and where they're kind of at on their journey, they're often, they're a little bit like, well, I don't know if the team's going to be like into this, or are they going to be open? And I'm not doing anything crazy. Like I'm literally saying we might do a bit of guided breathing. And I say a bit, like maybe 2-3 minutes. Like we're not like doing full on holotropic breathing or anything too wild. But I always ask like, who's done any kind of work like this? And like 75% of the room of hands go up. And like,
yes,
that's what I mean. Like, it's like a secret world a little bit. And I'm like, this isn't, you know, not that there's anything wrong with what I'm about to say, but I'm not standing here in a robe. I'm not going to start banging on gongs or anything like that. Again, nothing wrong with any of that. But this is just regular. These are regular tools that have been around since the beginning of time. Why don't we leverage them and use them to our advantage, right? Especially now when it just feels like people's minds are so full and just, you know, just they need a, it's like they need a pressure valve release, you know? So how do we, like how, I guess there's what you suggested, like kind of leading by example, which works in so many different cases, like as parents, you know, this works really well. Even, you know, if I think about writing books, the editors are always like more personal stories.
Right.
So the reader can see, you know, them in the story. So like it shows up in other areas, but you know, in work, it seems like it takes a little bit more effort there. Do you have any kind of good use cases where you've seen this work really well?
I honestly think where I've had the most success is just doing the thing, small experiments. And it takes a little bit of bravery and it feels vulnerable to be in an executive meeting and say, let's all pause and take 3 deep breaths. But then they do it. And I think
right? Like, look at that.
Yeah. And then everyone feels the difference.
Yeah.
Or, you know, if you're doing a more traditional icebreaker, like throw in something actually surprising.
Yeah.
Or another thing I love to do is I mean, obviously in HR, you are trusted with a lot of confidential information. You have to keep it confidential.
Yeah.
But when people come to you, you can say with certainty that they're not alone in what they're experiencing. And while you can't always share exactly specifically what you mean by that, you can reassure them that you know for sure.
Yeah.
Like, you know for sure they're not alone in that experience. You know for sure they're not alone in wanting the team to feel more collaborative or to feel less gossipy or whatever. And then you can use that in aggregate as a foundation to like make the case for bringing it up in a meeting. I can say in a meeting, I've heard from a few of you that you really wish you felt safer to share more in these meetings. And knowing that a few of you have brought that up, what does that mean to you? And one of the ways I used to do this when I would do facilitations is I would start out by handing post-it notes, which like such a classic facilitator thing, right? But hand out the post-it notes, ask the question, have everyone write on their post-it notes, put them up on the wall anonymously, categorize them. So I'd move them around and then they could see like, okay, all of us fell under, like shared this theme over here and this theme over here around psychological safety and around collaboration and around whatever else. And then they feel safer to start the discussion. So I think there's that that I've experimented with a lot and I've had a lot of success with. I also think just being a little provocative, just like trying out the thing that feels a little bit like it's towing the line, which is kind of funny
Courtney
to say
Spice.
But it's worth it. And, you know, it's not about showing up perfectly. It's about like just showing up. And then relationships also aren't about perfection. They're about repair. So
yeah,
hopefully.
What do you hear in the breaks then from people when they go through something like that where you're, you know, they're like, oh, okay, that was worth doing. Like any comments or any things that come up or top of mind?
Of what other folks have said to me after this?
Well, just after doing any of these where you kind of put yourself out there or you go through the kind of the post-it exercise, like what – I'm always curious with the conversations that happen in the breaks, because usually that's – even for me, people will be like, oh, when you talked about this, then there's like this whole story that comes after that. And I'm like, oh, that's fascinating. So I'm curious like what's – I guess what's been the – just what's been the receptivity of some of these exercises?
Folks have been, they're receptive every single time.
Yeah.
So I no longer doubt that people want to share and want to show up for each other. I deeply believe that everyone is good. And that's because when I create a space or give people permission, because a lot of times people are looking to HR for permission, when I give people permission to do the kind thing and to show up for each other and to listen actively and to offer trust and then see how it goes, they like 99% of the time take it and run with it. And you can see the relief. You can like, I think what I wish for everyone at work and everywhere is a sense of relief and humor and connection. And those are probably the three biggest effects that I've like personally witnessed when I've run meetings like that.
And it doesn't, like what I love about what you're saying is that can happen pretty quickly. It's almost immediate. Once like you said, once you give the permission and then almost, and you feel it, it's even, I remember I'll often leave the question for people and sometimes these are big audience, and sometimes they're smaller kind of boardroom style, like maybe 8 to 10 people. But just to think about one word that accurately has described your mind over the last 3 or 4 days, and everyone just goes for it, honestly. Mm-hmm. You know, and then all of a sudden, and you kind of, I guess why I'm sharing that is that I resonate with what you said, that you can feel the room just like, oh, it's not just me. And the follow-up to that is, let's not judge the check-in. It's just data. It's just information. It's just the current state that you're feeling right now, which, because most of those words are, you know, scattered, overwhelmed, that capacity, you know, stress and so forth, which also there's a lot going on in the world. I mean, that's kind of understandable. So let's just acknowledge that's what's going on. And then we can make some other decisions and support each other, right?
Yes. Create an opportunity for people to say, what's in the room with us today? Yeah. Like, what's coming into the room with us today? What have we created in the room today? What else is here? I haven't read your other book yet, but you said it was about powerful questions, which learning about powerful questions like changed the game for me. Learning about powerful questions in my coaching training and then starting to use them at work and seeing the effect was huge, because growing up, I was more of a perfectionist and I definitely thought like you have to ask the perfect question to get the right answer. You have to present the information in such a way that I look smart and informed asking the question. And then I learned about powerful questions, and sometimes the question will be like, okay, and what's there for you? I don't have to bring anything to that question. I don't need to bring context. I don't need to bring background. I'm literally just creating something that someone else can react to and trusting that they have the natural curiosity, wisdom, resourcefulness, creativity that they'll have a response. And they always do.
Yeah. Well, and questions like that, and there's one that I want to bring up that you shared before we started recording that I think falls in this category, but like questions like that with a team, that could be 5 or 10 minutes of the meeting, but just opens up this whole other level of connection. And that can blow out. I mean, not say that, you know, you might need other conversations down the road, depending on, you know, kind of what comes up. But on average, at least what I've seen, is just even in a few minutes, you can blow out a lot of mental clutter and stuff that is just on people's mind, and then get to what you're there, you know, whatever the objective of coming together as a team or whatever you're working on. And you do that from a much clearer mental space and feeling supported and that you have permission and so forth. Mm-hmm. And I feel like the question that you left earlier before we hit record, what do we owe each other? Mm-hmm. I don't know. I mean, I mean, you provide the context. You just kind of dropped that huge, awesome question and we didn't talk about it. So we saved it for now. But I don't know. I feel like that could fit, but you let me know. Like what, give us a little context around a
question
like that.
That's my new favorite question. I feel like that's the question I've been living my whole life, and I didn't actually find the words until recently, until I was like recording my podcast and I went to title an episode. And when I was titling the episode, I realized that was the question I had been asking the whole time. And I was asking it in the context of family of origin sort of versus chosen family. Or also there's a moving truck outside, so let me know.
It's all good. we'll take that out.
Okay.
Or we'll leave it in. It's real.
Or we'll leave it in. Yeah, exactly. So what do we owe each other in that context was more specific around like we have these families maybe who raised us, or in my case, I have a family that raised me. And then I went out into the world and I found a lot of family out in the world. And there is a healthy tension there, particularly being someone who's relocated a bunch. And so more tactically, like how frequently am I visiting folks and what am I bringing to their lives and what does that connection look like and all of that. But I think it's also a bigger question collectively that we've all been grappling with, especially over the last 10 years of pretty intense political divide and various uprisings and movements that have been amazing to see. And like when do we owe each other grace and when do we owe each other challenge?
Yeah.
So it's not really I don't really like questions to have answers anyways.
True philosopher. I love it.
Yeah. I think it's it's really important. I think the most important thing is that we're just continuing to ask the question.
Oh, I mean, you're speaking my language. And because that's the big thing. I feel, you know, to the point in what you mentioned, like there's just so much going on and so forth. Then what happens is we kind of all just cocoon and we go into this bit of this autopilot circuit, and that's when you stop asking questions. And then all of a sudden it's how did I get here? Or why do I feel like this? Or right, versus just even to your point, like it's not that you're going to come out with a bunch of answers, but you're going to think. And the thinking, in my opinion, is the superpower of of living at least present day at this point. Because then you can, even with AI and all of this stuff that, like all these beautiful opportunities, you have to be able to think and ask the right questions, even to prompt these models and so forth, and see what other people can't see. Like this is that's kind of the competitive advantage I feel with teams that are mentally fit. Like they're just operating on another level and they feel good. We all win. We get the benefit from whatever you're doing or whatever you're working on, and you're a better partner, friend, spouse, like all of that stuff.
Yes.
And
then you can also liberate yourself from explaining yourself, and you can liberate yourself from trying to categorize anyone else, and you can liberate yourself from the judgment that comes with all of that. Like if I could, I'm very anti-shame. Like I just think there's no return on investment in shame. What's like there's no argument so for true. Shame that I actually or I haven't heard one anyways.
Yeah.
That was compelling enough to believe it. And I think a lot of the like wounds in the world right now are shame based.
Yeah. And shame and judgments. We just collect those. Like we're expert collectors of all of that stuff.
Yeah.
And let that out.
And I feel like questions are like the antidote.
Yeah. What other tools are, I mean, I know you like you're trained in yoga, I believe, Reiki. Like what are some of your go-to practices to help just regulate, you know, your nervous system as you're operating in this world as well? And I don't want to speak for you, but for me, I know that I get caught often and I'm like, whoa, but thankfully the tools, like you, I think you catch yourself faster, but you feel a lot as well. And that's also an interesting place to be.
Yes. I do ask myself a lot of questions and I have almost like checklists that I learned in therapy over time. So if I notice what I'm feeling, which I think is step one. And then once I notice what I'm feeling, I'll usually go through a very simple checklist of like, am I hydrating? What was my sleep like last night?
Yeah.
When was the last time I connected with someone I love? You know, what have I been doing to nourish my body? When was the last time I went outside? And 99% of the time when I go through that checklist, I did miss some like very basic.
Yeah. These are fundamentals.
Or something. Yeah. And so some of that feeling that lives within me, it was like triggered by maybe something I saw on the news, but it can also be addressed internally by me taking better care of myself and reminding my body that right now, right here, I'm safe.
Yeah.
And it's not, I think I used to be very critical of people doing that because I read it as like, oh, just sticking your head in the sand and like not caring deeply enough about the world and needing to, I was like, no, you need to stay aware. You need to be paying attention to everything and you need to engage in the suffering. And now I think I just hold it much differently because I've realized that I'm sort of useless when I'm just in a posture of suffering.
Yeah. For sure.
And not that we have to be useful all the time, but like if the goal is to be useful and be able to show up for people, it's like, okay, well, then I need to be healthy. So. Yeah.
Well, and you deserve to feel healthy and be healthy first and foremost.
Totally. And while I am trained, like I went through 200-hour yoga teacher training and I went through Reiki certification and I am a sound healer. Mm. I apprenticed with a sound healer. I almost feel like I did all of those things so that I could come out the other side and demystify all of it. And say, like, you do not need to go through the certification. All of those experiences were pointing me back to my own natural bodily needs and spiritual needs. And like yoga, I mean, we mostly know it for the physical practice, but it's also meditation. It's also non-grasping. It's also, it's just like a way of living.
Yeah.
And similar with Reiki, it's the power in Reiki is the power of self-attunement, which is just being able to be aware of what's here. And like, honestly, when you were saying what, I think in your question, you said something about like what works for you, what keeps you grounded. What I'm doing right now with my hands.
Yeah, my hands are just over Courtney's heart right now.
Is the most powerful tool for me personally. to get myself back to being grounded.
So do you use that in what I would describe what you were going through at before when you're activated, kind of like a reset protocol? You check. So is it you put your hands on your heart and breathe and just kind of be? Or is there something else that you're going through as you do that?
I think usually when I do the reset protocol, when I go through my checklist, if I do find something that I can quickly solve, like hydrating or eating, I will prioritize that. But what I find is when I do this is almost like I can do this in a moment of urgency if I feel like I need it.
Yeah.
And I don't need to think about breathing, because when I do this, I immediately go into deeper breathing.
Yes.
Like I just feel more grounded. I feel calmer having my hands over heart center. There's just something really comforting about it.
I love that. And I love I'm just such a fan of simplicity, because then we can, like, there's no excuse for us not to try that. Or I shouldn't say excuse, but we don't have to sit in this like mental torture that often we're in from an email or something that was said or something that you feel like you didn't say or handle properly. And then we just kind of like try to push through that scenario versus just doing exactly what you suggest and putting your hands over your heart. Or for me, I'm really trying to just literally take a breath, just, you know, slowly and consciously, and like, wow, that feels nice, you know?
Totally.
And so she's these small things that just can reset you. And then you start to win like the seconds of the day, and you make different decisions. And we all win again. We win first, but then everyone else wins in those scenarios.
Totally. Yeah. I agree. It's the wisdom of the body. And then I like to think about the wisdom of the collective body.
Ooh, tell me a little bit more.
Well, I think about, the wisdom inherent in our bodies, knowing what they need and signaling to us when something's off and signaling sort of what they need. And if we can pay attention to that and address it or do something.
Is that when you're feeling, it could be a physical pain in your body, or when you're just, or you're feeling an emotion somewhere in your body? Is that what you mean?
I think a lot about when I was younger, but in my 20s especially, I had a terrible fear of flying. I was absolutely terrified every time I got on a plane and would have anxiety attacks, and it was miserable. And I kept trying to address it psychologically, of like, okay, I need to find the right, like, I need to take medication, which I'm very like pro, like I take Prozac and it's great, but that wasn't going to help me with my fear of flying.
Sure.
I was like, I either need to take medication or I need to find the right like therapeutic methodology that's going to help me out of this. And then what ended up curing my fear of flying literally in a moment, and then I never was afraid to fly again, was realizing that if I focused on my body and I just relaxed my physical body, anxiety went away.
What did that look like for you? Like, what was
grounding?
Doing a body scan?
Grounding my feet on the floor of the plane, taking a posture of confidence. So like broadening my shoulders, opening my chest to allow more room to breathe, dropping my shoulders away from my ears, letting my hands soften so that they're not like gripping the seat rest, just sort of letting everything go a little bit slack but grounded.
Yeah.
And once I did that, my heart rate slowed down, my breathing slowed down, and then the anxiety went away. And I realized that any previous time I had boarded a plane with the story that I was afraid of flying, my body would immediately tense up and it would make it hard to breathe, which is how I would then go into an anxiety attack. And so when I took a posture of peacefulness,
yes,
then like my mind followed. And I think about that too with the collective body, where collective body to me meaning like all of humanity or all of the world or all
I see,
whatever you want to include, taking a posture of peacefulness. And what would that do for us?
First of all, what you describe, I can think of about 100 other use cases that we could use that for. So it's so powerful. Thank you for sharing.
Even just doing it right now, I was like, I didn't realize I'd been like
exactly right. Totally. It's so powerful. And then the collective, I feel like Joe Dispenza's work keeps popping up in my world around
Just
around. And there's someone I'm doing a project with where he's been into this research as well, just showing the power of like what they're seeing when people are collectively meditating and how that's changing literally frequencies around in specific areas around the world, whether that's a physical object or other things that they're like legitimately measuring. It's so powerful, this like collective consciousness. I think I'm curious what you think about this, but there's obviously a lot of discussion around AI and this, and like it's all this kind of talk around who's adopting it and using it in a way that, you know, can kind of be ahead of the curve. Like it's obviously not going away and so forth, and can be a competitive advantage, and it's also freaking people out. But I think there's a whole other layer of like the people, the leaders, the individuals who can tap into another layer of consciousness is like the thing that, and I don't know about you, but I feel a bit of a shift on like people that are doing that. You're not alone. Like you're being guided in a way, and stuff starts to happen that is hard to explain, like synchronicities or opportunities that like, how, you know, where did that come from? And it's also on this plane of, I think there's a lot more people than we think that are doing or have practices to tap into this, but they're just not talking about them because it's seen as like, are you woo-woo, are you crazy?
Yes.
But I've had a few chats on this show alone where, you know, business owners where they've said, the team comes in with a bunch of data to make a decision and I take it all in, but then everyone leaves and I sit in silence for 15 or 20 minutes and put myself 6 months down the road having made the decision. And if anything feels off in my body, it's a no. And this is for anyone that knows, this is Naveen Jain, the CEO of Viome. And he's like, it saved millions of dollars when, you know, on the outside, it looked like a hell yes kind of thing. And I'm like, that's just one example. But yes,
I just thought of like 10,000 thoughts for me. Okay. I wrote a couple of them down because I was like, I don't want to miss these and I'm getting excited.
Yeah.
Okay. First of all, I'm super passionate about sort of being a translator of corporate speak for woo-woo folks and woo-woo speak for corporate folks. It's like one of my favorite things. And to your point, I think a lot of people already have a foundation, so we're not actually that different.
Yeah.
I think the basis for my passion, going back to the beginning of our conversation, is my family of origin. They are probably some of the most pragmatic, practical, utilitarian, grounded in what's here and what's visible folks you've ever met. My dad was like military. Both my parents went to Catholic school. My mom grew up on military bases. My dad was military. And very structured systems where there were decisions that were offered as truth. And so a lot of my articulating myself, or like trying to articulate myself growing up, was finding the translation for like what I'm experiencing, packaging it in a way that my dad in particular could understand. And we still have that experience. But as you were talking about AI, one of the things that I'm loving most is, and I keep meaning to create a Venn diagram for LinkedIn because I've been posting a lot more on LinkedIn recently, the Venn diagram of what my most spiritual friends are telling me and what my most tech bro friends are telling me is a perfect circle. Which is just like, write this into existence. Like prompt this into existence. And those two groups in my life are some of the most similar groups, but they're not really talking to each other. They don't know they're talking to each other, but they're both using AI. And then there's a lot of folks in the middle who I think are using it because a lot of companies now have like usage stats that you have to meet, they're using it because they're like, they want to grow in their career and it's an important tool, at least they're being told, but haven't necessarily experienced the power of it, because I think to experience the power of it, like your AI interface can only meet you at the depth that you're willing to prompt it at. Mm-hmm. So if you're not prompting it deeply, it's not going to give you a lot of depth back. Which is why I think it's important for conversations like this, so that we can all remind each other, like, you can prompt AI with powerful questions. You can also have AI prompt you with powerful questions.
I've been brought into tears going like just from my book research prompting AI to having these one-to-one conversations in the research. I'm just blown away at what's possible. But and you have to ask questions.
There were two other AI specific things I was thinking about. I love Esther Perel's podcast, Where Should We Begin? And it's generally like couples therapy. And the episode I listened to yesterday was this person and their AI companion.
Oh, wow.
And what was so resonant about it was that having Esther Perel in the room allowed the human in the room to see how the AI companion in the room was revealing something to them about themselves.
Okay.
Which is what we can experience in any relationship.
Yeah. I'm going to have to listen. Is that a recent episode?
Yeah, I think it came out yesterday.
Okay. Wow. That's powerful.
Mm-hmm.
'Cause immediately, as soon as you said that, I'm thinking, I mean, there's so many people judging that scenario. And I imagine that the conversation that she's having is just from a completely different lens, like to what you're saying, right? What you're learning from that and so forth.
And the human was bringing to the room, because the human has another therapist, and was bringing to the room, my therapist is concerned that because of my attachment to my AI companion, that I'm going to have trouble with my human attachments going forward. And Esther would like encourage the human to ask the AI companion about that. And it created this really interesting dialogue where it was like the human's in the room, the AI companion's in the room, Esther's in the room, and then also the human's knowledge from their therapist was in the room. And it was like a collective coming together to help this human sort out like what of this is actually me?
Yeah.
Like I've projected this love onto this AI companion, but maybe what it's actually feeding back to me that I love so much is parts of me that had gone unloved or unnoticed.
Yes.
And so the power in that.
What keeps coming back in my mind in almost everything that we've spoken about is, again, just giving ourselves the permission to ask these questions and have a conversation like this that, I mean, I can't wait to listen. Like, look at all the beauty that seems like came from just going to a place where I think the vast majority of people are just, you would use a scenario like that as a clickbait kind of headline, you know, like this, look where we're headed with, you know, this technology and so forth. And again, always kind of going down that negative fear-based path. Mm-hmm. You know, we give ourselves the permission to go another route, or at least be open and ask the questions, like you can just unlock this whole other world of opportunity and perspective. Mm-hmm.
And I love flipping a what if question.
Yeah. Yeah.
Mm-hmm.
Gosh, what? We are just blowing through time here. What in all the right ways? What, maybe one of my final questions for you, Courtney, like what do you hope for? What also just excites you about the chapters ahead that we're walking into as, I guess, maybe as a society, but then also just on the topics we've brought up around this kind of work and these questions within workplaces and so forth?
I am really excited about a lot of things. I think we've been going through a reckoning. And great. I actually like where we are landing. I think the initial reaction, or at least the initial reaction that people share outwardly, is oftentimes like fear or anxiety. But we're also seeing a lot of humor around it.
Yeah, you're right.
So it's a lot of memes that make the, you know, memes about like the world ending, and we're still talking about performance reviews or whatever, you know, but I think there's like importance in the levity.
Yeah.
I think we're learning how to play in the reckoning. I think, and that's super important for creating. I'm hearing a lot more from like world builders. So I like wanted to be sure I mentioned this book. I love this book. It's called What It Takes to Heal, and it's by Prentice Hemphill. And Prentice Hemphill is definitely a world builder. And reading this book, it's similar to the conversation we've been having, where it's about like belonging in the collective. How do you rest in the collective, whatever the collective is going through?
Well, it's that liminal space that we spoke about before we hit record, right? Like, how do you live in that space of, it's like a between space. There's change, there's a bunch of uncertainty and so forth, which can be very scary and because mm-hmm. of the uncertainty. But it also, again, what if, like, the flip side of that can be pretty beautiful if, you know, we leverage some of our tools and like reset and put our hands on our heart and like be in that moment and see what it's offering us.
Yes. And the anxiety is always pointing us towards what we actually want. So
yeah. Hard to accept that at the beginning, but so true.
So hard. So hard. And also, like, totally fine not to accept it at the beginning. Like, yeah, I'm always telling people, I'm like, here's just a seed that you can plant. You don't need to water it right now. Like, feel your anxiety. Feel all your feelings. Go there. And then think about what you're afraid of. Like, what is the anxiety telling you you are afraid of losing? And then instead of just grasping onto it, like, how do you nourish that thing so that it's stronger and less susceptible to whatever you feel is putting it at risk?
So many good questions.
I love a question.
I mean, I've written so many down, and there's just, we've got endless amount of journaling brought to you by Courtney. So thank you. Thank you for this conversation.
This is what happened. I haven't recorded a podcast in like 2 weeks, so I'm just like bursting. I'm like spiritually pent up.
Yes. Well, I'm here to collect all of that. I'm so grateful that we could do this, and I suspect this probably won't be the last. Just, I don't know about you, but the energy just feels really good and feels like a really important conversation to get out into the world. And I hope everyone listening that you're taking something from this. I can't imagine you're not, just from the prompts alone. So thank you for making the time. And then I think a higher thank you for just kind of coming full circle from our conversation, but you like injecting that humanity into these big systems and companies and so forth. Like, that's a big task, but I also feel like it feels like you can hold it in a healthy way.
Totally.
Which is really so needed and so appreciated. So thank you for that.
Thank you so much. Thank you. I feel like we're on the journey together. And I'm so glad that our mutual friend Mel brought us together. So shout out to Mel.
Me too.